Ah, pregnancy. A time of such joy for some, such admiration for your body and excitement for what parenting will bring. But also for some, crippling anxiety, weird aches, pains and cravings, and the prospect that you actually have to give birth to this baby at some point. Pregnancy can be a really strange period of your life and can feel so different for so many people. Season 2 of Bun in the Oven is here to help you navigate this bonkers time alongside me, Holly Grant, whilst I also navigate this bonkers time during my current second pregnancy. In this season of the podcast, I'm joined by experts in all areas of maternal and perinatal health in real time throughout this pregnancy to cover topics that mean you don't have to spend hours on Google down a rabbit hole with no real evidence-based answer at the end of it all. I've worked with thousands of women over the last 11 years, and specifically since launching the Bump Plan in 2020. I have heard everything and admitted everything, so don't worry, we cover the embarrassing, gross stuff that you're not sure you want to ask your best friend. See, this is the information you wish you knew before you even knew you needed it. I can't wait for you to join me on this journey as we work out what on earth we're doing together. Enjoy season 2. In today's episode of Bun in the Oven, I am joined by the wonderful, knowledgeable and passionate Dr. Sinead Dufour to talk all about pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain. Pelvic girdle pain, or PGP, can be misdiagnosed, misunderstood and left untreated, but it doesn't need to be that way. Sinead has worked tirelessly to help raise awareness of the evidence around pelvic girdle pain and is leading the way in how we think about it. This episode is great for you if you're starting to suspect you have some signs of PGP, you've been diagnosed with it but feel totally lost as to how to move forwards, or you work with those with pelvic girdle pain. I'm currently 26 weeks pregnant and have been really lucky to have no symptoms during both pregnancies. My body's feeling great at the moment and long may it continue, but I have worked with so many women who've experienced it and it's such an important topic to share the facts about. In this episode, we discuss what pelvic girdle pain actually is, how we might treat it, why treatment will vary for each individual, how physical activity can benefit pelvic girdle pain, and what to do if you think you might be suffering with it. Dr. Sinead Dufour is my version of Beyoncé, and I couldn't believe it when she agreed to be on the podcast. Sinead is an associate clinical professor in the Faculty of Health Science at McMaster University in Canada, and her current research interests include pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain. Sinead stays current as a pelvic health physiotherapist through her practice at the World of My Baby, The Womb, a family of perinatal care centres in Ontario, Canada. Sinead has been an active member of the Society of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists of Canada, SOGC, sitting on multiple committees and leading several clinical practice guidelines. See my Beyoncé. I hope you find this episode as interesting as I did, and it helps if you're suffering from pelvic girdle pain or know someone who is. Enjoy. And now, ahead of this episode, a few words from our sponsor. Given the theme of this podcast, I imagine that some of you are currently pregnant or planning a family. So many women I know just aren't sure how to move their body safely during this changing time, or they want to stay active but need someone to show them the way and hold their hand. That's where the Bump Plan Pregnancy comes in. The Bump Plan Pregnancy is a holistic prenatal fitness plan that allows you to work out with confidence at each trimester of your pregnancy. Founded by myself, Holly Grant, the Bump Plan Pregnancy has already helped over 25,000 pregnant women stay active safely and feel empowered throughout their pregnancies. Through its trimester-specific workouts, in which I'm always at the same stage of my pregnancy as you will be in yours, extensive education hub, discount hub, and growing Facebook community, you'll feel supported and part of a welcome community. Let me help you move safely through your pregnancy, maintain your fitness and strength, and enter parenthood strong and prepared for all the demands it poses. As a listener of Bun in the Oven, I'm offering you 20% per month off the cost of your monthly subscription to the Bun Plan, simply by entering the code BUN20 at checkout. To get started today, simply head to pilatespt.co.uk/the-bump-plan and enter the code BUN20 at checkout. That's BUN20 in lowercase to get 20% off the monthly cost of the Bump Plan Pregnancy. Join our community today and enter labour and motherhood strong, capable and prepared with the Bump Plan. Hi Sinead, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I feel like I'm interviewing Beyonce. I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. I really am. I'm excited for our conversation today. So thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. I know it's a topic that you feel so passionate about, and it's a topic that I probably talk about almost every day, given that most of my clients are females who are pregnant or postpartum. So I feel like you're going to answer so many questions for me as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So first of all, then, let's get started with a little bit of reality. So I always like to kind of admit that everything can seem very polished when you produce podcasts. But also, you know, we're women who are also trying to juggle children and technology and careers. And so this is the second time that we've attempted this. For some reason, it let us down last time. And where are you currently filming, Sinead?
So I am this time in my son's bedroom, using my daughter's computer because the program didn't want to work on my computer from my office last time. So we're trying second time around, hence the bright blue walls. I'm in my son's bedroom and this is real life. We're just going to make it work. So it's all good.
It's a family affair, basically.
Yes.
You're all involved basically. In some way.
A group effort.
So today we're talking about pelvic girdle pain, but I thought we could clear up a bit of language at first, because often I'll have clients who mention to me like, oh, I've been told I've got SPD, or I've been told I've got pelvic girdle pain, and you know, people are still calling it SPD. So let's start first of all just kind of clearing up some language there.
Yeah, so I think that's a great place to start, Holly. So you're quite right that historically, you know, this whole sort of issue was viewed very biomechanically. And I mean, we're going to get into that over the course of our conversation. But because of that, because it was sort of viewed and assumed that this was a biomechanical issue, it was assumed actually that there were dysfunctions at the level of either the symphysis pubis joint at the front or the sacroiliac joints at the back. So oftentimes, you know, symphysis pubis pain or pain in that joint was used interchangeably with symphysis pubis dysfunction, right? Or sacroiliac joint pain and sacroiliac joint dysfunction. And actually, you know, where we've come and landed in terms of the state of the science is we recognize actually almost never is there a dysfunction at these joints in pregnancy. So it's really incorrect and it's really being encouraged and has been, frankly, over the last decade, but it's slow to catch on, right? So really it's been discouraged to use those terms of dysfunction because it's incorrect. And also if, you know, a woman is feeling like there is a dysfunction, something with her pelvis isn't functioning as it should, that understandably comes with sort of different beliefs and fears and lack of robustness now in that structure. So yes, these terms have been used interchangeably, pain and dysfunction. Definitely, we have been called to stop referring to, you know, a pain experience in this part of our body as dysfunction. And actually, even discouraged to even be talking in terms of symphysis pubis pain or sacroiliac joint pain or, you know, glute pain. Really, any pain that spans that pelvic girdle that pops up while you're pregnant or in the first year postpartum, really there's consensus that that all should just be referred to as pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain. Keep it simple, because actually the pain experience in that part of the body really doesn't tell you much about why the pain is there in the first place. And what we know is that it isn't a dysfunction at any of the joints, right? So really we've kind of shifted our perspective. And because we've shifted our perspective, we kind of have to shift our language. So people very much, I mean, lay people, women experiencing this issue, healthcare providers, fitness providers, everyone in fairness is slowly kind of trying to catch up.
Yeah. So we've basically moved away from being so specific about one particular joint, because obviously anyone who's listening to this who maybe still doesn't know a huge amount about anatomy, often we think of the pelvis as being, or we might describe the pelvis as being like a bowl, you know, with a hole at the base of it. We think of the pelvis as being quite a like one complete bone almost, but actually what people don't realize is, yeah, it's kind of two side bones that connect at the front, and then they connect around the back as well. So there are joints there, which is why in the past when we thought it was a mechanical issue, we instantly went to those joints where there might be some slight movement. But now actually, yeah, we've taken it away, and pelvic girdle pain now essentially is any pain that is around the pelvic area, but it can also go down the legs as well, can't it? Talk to us about where people might feel pelvic girdle pain.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we get into a little bit more about, so for the women who are experiencing this issue, what actually is going on, it makes sense why people's experiences can vary to a certain degree. So one of the things that can happen is some of the structures through the pelvic floor and other muscles that cross that pelvic girdle can actually go into a state where they're becoming overprotective or holding more tension, right? This is actually something that's a very consistent feature of women who have this issue, is this overprotection response. And of course, you know, depending on which muscles are overprotecting and for how long, we can actually start to get a little bit of impeding through, you know, namely the sciatic notch or the sciatic nerve. And so any type of compression through that structure, you can start to feel pain or discomfort down into the leg. I mean, if we're getting into true compression of the sciatic nerve, it often then has a very distinct sort of neurological clinical picture. And then we would kind of classify that in its own sort of distinct form. But when we're getting minor compression of these structures, you know, we can have some pain radiating sort of into the glutes or down into the buttock. But as soon as it's starting to radiate like past the knee, that's when we know we have to start thinking of, you know, the neurological system involvement being a bit more distinct. And we've now taken it out of that kind of category of pregnancy related pelvic girdle pain. So we're talking really about pain in the pelvic girdle, and that may kind of go down sort of into the glutes and down the thighs a bit, but it's fairly localized to the pelvic area.
And so where would you say most of the people that you see who have pelvic girdle pain will kind of point to or describe as pelvic girdle pain? Because often, you know, we have lots of bump line members who'll say, like, I'm getting pain in X area, I'm getting pain here. Is that pelvic girdle pain? Where are you mainly hearing it from people?
Yeah. So in my clinical practice, of course, and this corroborates with the research actually, which is nice because that doesn't always happen. But a lot of the time it really is either in that front symphysis pubis joint or around that joint, even into the groin, right? So even some women will say, you know, it's almost like in my crotch, like I almost feel like this stinging crotch-like pain. And they're sort of pointing along the symphysis pubis, maybe along the side of the symphysis pubis where we know some structures attach kind of into the groin, or in the sacrum on the back, right? On those two side joints, you know, that connect with the sacrum and kind of radiating in that region, right? So really, for the most part, this sensitivity and this pain experience does seem to live, for the most part, around those pelvic joints. And people often do tend to feel this experience when they are, you know, mechanically loading, or they'll feel it a little bit more intense when they're mechanically loading these structures. And so it's understandable why we thought for so long that therefore it must be mechanical, right? We just know now that that hypothesis, as reasonable as it was, has been proven to be incorrect, right? And so, you know, we know now it isn't mechanical, but it does sort of present, you know, that way, as I said, so we can appreciate why for a long time we thought it was mechanical.
Yeah, agreed. So let's say somebody's listening to this and they think, gosh, you know what, that sounds exactly like what I am struggling with right now. How is it diagnosed?
Yeah, so really this is another great question, because when it comes to this pain experience, because there isn't really an actual specific dysfunction, right? So for each person, they're going to have a myriad of upstream things that are actually making their tissues more protective and sensitive. So everyone's pathophysiology is going to be a little bit different. So for that reason, even the term diagnosis for this particular issue is incorrect, actually, right? So, you know, how might someone identify that they're having this persisting issue and they're not just having what we would refer to as, you know, common benign aches and pains in pregnancy versus this more persisting issue that's telling us the system's upregulated and that's telling you that you would do very well to get some assistance with someone who knows what they're doing, right? I think that's more of what we're talking about. So really, I mean, we know for this issue, it's about 50% of women that end up having it. And it happens much more frequently in a second or third pregnancy, much less frequency in a first pregnancy, right? And it's that, you know, even sort of prevalence that tells us right away, well, clearly it's not pregnancy that's the problem. Because if pregnancy was the problem, all pregnant women would have this, or it would be the same with each pregnancy. And so we know right away, actually, that assumption, thinking it was something specifically with the pregnancy, is not correct, right? It has to do with other context that then the state of pregnancy, the system is now so overwhelmed, right? So it's really, we treat it by figuring out, well, what is the other context? Pregnancy just tipped you over the edge. What are the other things that are there that are really the issue, right? So how you would know that you're in that scenario versus just like the typical aches and pains? Typical aches and pains, really and truly, and I would argue probably every single person who's been pregnant, probably at least one day in their pregnancy, had a bit of an ache in their back or their hip or one of their, you know, pelvic joints. But if you are able to kind of like manage it and it's short-lived, you know, you think, oh, maybe I'm going to do a little bit of extra yoga tonight. I'm going to make sure I get a better sleep. I'm going to put a heat pack on that, you know, maybe I'm going to have my partner just give my back a little rub. It just, I need a little bit of TLC and then it's fine. Well, yeah, like you're good. Where it is evident that we no longer have what we refer to as like nociception as the pain, meaning this very acute transient thing that will go away. And it's actually starting to tell us the whole nervous system is a bit amplified. Now we have the brain really registering things as being threatening when they shouldn't be threatening, like turning over in bed shouldn't be threatening. But women who have a lot of pain every time they do that, walking down the road shouldn't be threatening. But women who can't do that when they walk, their brain is now interpreting things as threatening that shouldn't be threatening. And that's nociplastic pain. And that's a very different amplification of the pain system. And that means the things you're going to be trying to fix it, which would work at the level of nociception, aren't going to work. You go for a massage, you maybe feel better for 10 minutes after, but then that like pain comes back, you're uncomfortable at night, and it's going on day after day, week after week. That is a very different pathophysiology now. That is telling us something very different. And this is really what underlies pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain. And so if you are in that category, you're trying sort of the usual things, and this issue is persisting, it's getting worse, and you're finding that you're actually getting quite distressed about the pain, right? That means you are now in this category. And then it means all the people who, you know, are going to be there to help you really need to make sure they are understanding this is an issue of nociplastic pain and not nociception. And that's where we kind of hit a stumbling block, because many, many, many care providers still are very outdated on this perspective, unfortunately. And they will sort of try to assist these mamas with an approach that's biomechanical and assuming the pain is through a nociception mechanism when it isn't. And that's usually why those care strategies don't completely fix the problem. They might palliate it a little bit, but they're not fixing it, right? If you really are working with someone who helps you fix the problem, it is fixed, gone, right? No more pain. Like you were out of pain by the time you give birth to your baby, right? And so that's why podcasts like this are really, really important. So people are aware that we have evolved in our science and actually that the solutions are very straightforward once you're working with the right person, right? There's lots of things people can do to completely, you know, calm down that amplification in their system.
Even those two descriptions that you gave, you know, the difference between someone who gets like occasional aches and pains, but, you know, the bath might help and the next day they feel much better, is so different to, yeah, someone who has pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain where it's kind of life-altering, you know, it's making them fearful of movement, it's persistent, it's affecting their enjoyment of life, because pain can be really pervasive. So even that is just a very different description. And what we often hear from members is that they've gone to the doctor and they've said, you know, I'm getting a lot of pain around here. And the doctor's kind of said, well, you know, you're pregnant. And, you know, that's just kind of what happens. And that's a real shame if you're not capturing someone who does actually have pelvic girdle pain, because as you've said, the treatment options are going to be pretty different. So we've talked about the difference in, you know, someone who's just got an ache and pain, maybe because they are pregnant, and someone who's got pelvic girdle pain. Can you tell us then, because this is to me such a fascinating answer, what is pelvic girdle pain then? So it's not biomechanical. It's not that your pelvis is unstable and we've got to stop you moving. Talk to us about what it actually is.
Yeah. So I think it can best be understood, or people can be most convinced of sort of our evolution when we look at the risk factors, right? So we now have a number of risk factors that have been very well established, repeated over and over again in different studies, well-done studies in different countries, and actually sort of synthesized in different clinical practice guidelines at this point, right? And when we look at the list of established risk factors, it once again really proves that this definitely isn't a biomechanical problem, because not a single risk factor has anything to do with biomechanics. So let's just go through them, because they will then kind of point to, well, what is happening, right? So one of the risk factors is a previous trauma, right? Well, we know that a previous trauma in sort of the acute phase, if it was actually a tissue trauma, might have some impact on tissue, but we also know that soft tissue completely heals and recovers in 16 weeks, right? So even when we're thinking of history of a previous trauma, it's still unlikely sort of the residue of that, what we're dealing with is at the tissue level. It's likely at the nervous system level. And we can also have traumas that weren't physical traumas. They were psychological traumas. They were other forms of trauma. And we see trauma altogether. Having a previous trauma is a risk factor. Well, a previous trauma, whether it was a childhood trauma, a birth trauma from your first birth, keep in mind, this is much more common in a subsequent birth. We know that a trauma has a very profound effect on the nervous system. We know that the pelvic floor in particular and the upper fibers of traps are uniquely wired to our threat response system in a very sort of protective, automated way, right? So when we kind of see previous trauma, now this is kind of priming and sensitizing the system, making it a little bit more hypervigilant. That makes sense that something like that, you would be more likely now when your buffering capacity is to the top, that now your alarm system is going to be more sensitive, right? So previous trauma, and we start to see teased out of that previous birth trauma, right? And now it's making sense why it's happening in subsequent births more often, right? Another one is lack of belief of improvement. This is a big one. So again, nothing to do with biomechanics, but this is a big one. And this is another risk factor, not just for having it, but it's also a risk factor for persistence of this issue. And this one, I think, really points that to what we said at the beginning in terms of we really need to stop using terms like symphysis pubis dysfunction. Because language like dysfunction, and if you think that dysfunction is related to the pregnancy hormones, and the pregnancy mechanics and the pregnancy hormones are going to move on in a more obvious way as the pregnancy goes on. And if your belief is that that's what the issue is, it's not surprising that your belief is going to be that this is therefore going to be a situation that amplifies as time goes on. And you're not going to really be believing that it's going to be going away because you're getting more pregnant, not less pregnant over time. And that lack of belief of improvement or that belief in that sort of false trajectory actually is one of the very things that keeps people stuck. And actually it's incorrect. That actually keeps your system in a state of alarm and fear, right? So that's another one. So already we're seeing like understanding now this pathophysiology based on two factors now of this kind of wind up, amplification, hypervigilance in the system, right? One of the other ones is a previous history of lower back pain. And so again, what we understand now about lower back pain is lower back pain in and of itself actually can't be traced to any specific structure, right? The whole biopsychosocial model and psychologically informed care perspective actually came out of our lack of success to correct back pain with sort of a structural approach. You know, that wasn't working. And now when we really look back, and in fact, there was a really great Lancet series dedicated to this a few years ago, highlighting that at the end of the day, even back pain has almost nothing to do with the specific structure. It has more to do with like the global biological systems, right? Which essentially is kind of now what we're seeing with pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain. And so like a history of lower back pain or history of that tells us that at one point in your life, your systems were so overwhelmed to capacity to the point that you had this episode, right? So perhaps, you know, even that's telling you like just your buffering capacity in your system isn't as good maybe as someone else's. You're already kind of close to the edge, right? We also have smoking as a risk factor. Well, smoking's not biomechanical, but smoking is inflammatory, right? Smoking translates to, you know, tissues not being as well vascularized and not as healthy, right? So now we're kind of shifting to sort of the state of low-grade inflammation. And we know that low-grade inflammation goes hand in hand with sensitization and more sensitive structures and just tissues that are just less robust and healthy. And then our last risk factor is obesity. And again, it used to be thought that obesity, you know, why it was an issue was through the vector of mechanical loading. You mechanically have more weight, but we don't see this as an issue with, you know, women who are pregnant mechanically with more weight when they're pregnant with twins. We don't see it as an issue with mechanically more weight if they happen to have a big baby. And actually, there was a really well done study done in the postnatal period, showing actually that breastfeeding was quite protective against postnatal pelvic girdle pain. And the only group that didn't sort of maintain any protection with breastfeeding were the group that were obese. So the authors actually hypothesized that, you know, why obesity and overweight is a problem and risk factor is because it's inflammatory. It has to do with the physiological impact, not the mechanical impact. And why breastfeeding is protective is because prolactin and oxytocin are anti-inflammatory, right? So again, if we just look at all the established risk factors, they are all pointing to more of like a physiological reason of why the tissues might be sensitive. And then that's certainly where a lot of the newer research is landing. And certainly, you know, those of us who are now following this care approach and practice, and we're approaching, you know, this issue from this perspective, we're getting fantastic outcomes after even just like one or two sessions, right? So we can even see in practice, we're hitting the right targets when we're really focusing on how are we going to normalize the physiology? Forget about the mechanics, right? How are we going to normalize the physiology? And you have to kind of figure out for each person, what is happening in their life? What has happened in their past? That's kind of dialing things up and taking things out of homeostasis. And for that specific person, how are we going to get things normalized again? Because really at the end of the day, we need to get people comfortable so they're sleeping well, and we need to get people walking and exercising. Like at a bare minimum, doing some sort of restorative movement, you know, prenatal yoga, Pilates, like these are the types of movement disciplines that are actually the best for pregnant women. And they're actually excellent movement disciplines when tissue is a little bit more sensitive. And we need to get people walking, right? So if we are having people in these states where they're not comfortable at night, they're not sleeping, and then they're in discomfort, so they're avoiding walking, we are setting someone up for a negative health trajectory over their pregnancy for them and their baby. We're not setting them up for success to birth that baby, and so on. So we have to make sure we understand how to get things back on track, how to get people sleeping, how to get people comfortable, and then walking and moving again. And then those two very things, getting people sleeping better and walking and moving, that actually then feeds the cycle to much more quickly, you know, get the systems back into homeostasis, right? So if you can kind of almost be focusing on those things first, then you end up having sort of this additive effect because now the systems are really coming online and healing.
That's so fascinating, because you do tend to, you know, tend to think when you're getting that much pain, oh, well, something's broken, you know, I must be damaged, I must be careful, I mustn't do too much. And as you've said, you know, that's not always the solution. And that is not, from a health point of view, definitely not the right way to go. Right. And if it's also not going to benefit you anyway, it's absolutely pointless. And one thing that stuck out there as well is we're kind of talking about language. And I've definitely been guilty of this in the past. I know for a long time, we would sort of say to people with pelvic girdle pain, well, you know, essentially, don't panic, this isn't for forever. Once you've had the baby, it will go away. But when you talked about the risk factor of, you know, not feeling like it's going to get better by just telling somebody, well, it'll be fine once the baby's here, that doesn't give them any hope that actually that pelvic girdle pain is going to improve during their pregnancy. And so then that becomes a risk factor in itself, whereas actually, there are treatments and there are ways that we can calm down that sensitive tissue. And so actually pelvic girdle pain can get better during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. They don't just have to wait till they give birth.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you kind of highlighted that there, because you're quite right. And I mean, certainly I'm sure I'm guilty of that perspective as well. Like, you know, previous to really taking a deep dive into this about a decade ago, because quite frankly, that's how I was trained. But that's incorrect. You know, telling someone, oh, don't worry, once you're not pregnant anymore, it will go away. That really is you acknowledging that you do not have a good handle at all on why their system is amplified. And, you know, what are the other things other than pregnancy going on? And when they are not pregnant anymore, is that sort of removing that? And, you know, now they have more buffering capacity? Sure. And that's why we think for many people, if they aren't really getting to the root of the issue, they take away that pregnancy overload. And now they've just come under the line of their buffering capacity. So they're okay. But what a miss of an opportunity to have helped them correct at the root all of those other things that are still there, you know? And so I think we know better now. We owe it to the mamas, like, who are caring for, to have the goal of, no, like, our goal is to ameliorate this. Our goal is to help you understand your biology so you get it, why your body's responding this way, so you understand your body actually isn't doing anything wrong. Your body is actually responding as it's supposed to the fact that you had a previous traumatic birth. You then had a miscarriage. You then, you know, are really sort of run ragged at home because you don't have a lot of support. You're on your own a lot. You know, all of these things, when the body is hypervigilant like that, in a state like that, that's how we're biologically designed. That's what your body's supposed to do. Pain is an alarm system. Pain is telling you status quo right now is not okay. Like, you need to do something about it, right? And so when people can kind of understand in their context, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And oh my goodness, my body is doing actually what it's designed to do. My body isn't kind of going rogue, doing this weird thing. That in and of itself is so reassuring to women. You know, when I say, well, knowing what I know about biology, I would never expect your pain alarm system to be quiet, knowing what every single day of yours looks like and knowing what you've been through. I would never expect that. Like, your outputs are functioning predictably the way they're supposed to. The issue is that a human being was never designed to go through that. A human being is not designed to live their life the way you are doing it. And your body is screaming for help. Your energy system is done. You know, you have these other things. Your nervous system is to the top. So we just have to kind of figure out, okay, what are going to be like the lowest hanging fruit of things we can kind of start on? Because then once the system has a bit more capacity, then it's kind of easier to do more, right? So even just people understanding, no, even though it feels like my pelvis is about to buckle and fail, it isn't. And even though it feels like my body is doing the wrong thing and it's feeling very untrustworthy, it's actually doing exactly what it's supposed to do, right? So even just that is hugely, hugely helpful. And I mean, those are all the beginnings of pain neuroscience education and people actually understanding how the pain system actually works in a personalized way. And you know, really when it comes to lumbopelvic pain across the board, we don't have any intervention that's actually better than that. It's just so interesting that so few practitioners really are utilizing that with pregnancy-related pelvic girdle pain, because there is still this notion that it's a nociception, it's an acute pain, it is kind of this mechanical thing, when it isn't any of those things, right? So our best strategy is the strategy that we would use for any lumbopelvic pain. And it's actually going first to help people understand how the pain system works and their biology and their risk factors and understanding biologically what's going on with them. And then you can kind of start to kind of dig your way out of the hole and reestablish homeostasis.
Yeah. And I love the thought that pain is almost like a little alarm going off telling you something's not right. Mm-hmm. And that is so clever. And I think we're so used to just being able to go to the doctor and get a tablet mm-hmm. that fixes everything. And I love that when you talk through those risk factors, it helps you realize that there might be very different reasons why one person has pelvic girdle pain and someone else mm-hmm. has pelvic girdle pain. And it also highlights that it's not going to be the same treatment for those two mm-hmm. people. But I love that it's about working out, okay, so what's the reason why you might be struggling with sensitivity right now? And what can we do for yeah. you that's going to calm that down? It's never going to be the same for two people. So what might be some of those treatments mm-hmm. that somebody gets for pelvic girdle pain? Because it isn't as simple as just having a tablet.
For sure. So one of the systems that I think is missed most often by the most well-meaning care providers who are trying to assist these mamas is the energy system. So, you know, you'll consistently see when you work with these mamas a lot, as we both do, right, that in a high proportion of cases, not always, but a high proportion of cases, the energy system is one of the things that is like on zero, right? So that's another, like your gas tank is done, your gas light comes on, right? The alarm system. Your energy system, like you are going to start to get symptoms, right? You're going to start to get symptoms of pain, symptoms of kind of feeling distressed. You're going to start to get these outputs, right? And so the energy system is a system that a lot of people really don't consider. And it's oftentimes one of the first systems I'll talk to my mamas about, especially if I say, okay, so, you know, do you kind of notice that your pain is more kind of like towards the end of your workday? And almost every single time it's, yeah, I can barely stand at the counter to like chop the vegetables to make dinner. Like I can barely even get through that part of my day. Like I am just done. I'm just in bits by that time, right? And you say, well, that's actually quite predictable with the energy system because it's going to tank at 4 o'clock, right? And so that's, so if we can kind of help women to sort of understand, well, yeah, like when you wake up in the morning, you might feel like a little bit kind of stiff and achy if you didn't have the best night's sleep. But once you kind of get over that, your cortisol is highest in the morning. So probably you're not going to notice it as much. And that's always when I suggest people to get out for a walk. I always say, like in the morning, if you're able to do even just a few minutes of sort of some gentle restorative movement, that's mindful, that you're getting your breath engaged. And I have a few little series that I video that I send all my clients as like examples, right? Do that and then get out for a walk, even if it's just a 10-minute walk, because you'll find your energy system is good. So you'll find that the walk is much more comfortable than you would have expected. And so that even right there is now starting to rewire the notion that walking is dangerous, that my pelvis can't handle, because you're kind of proving yourself wrong, right? And then you're also capturing natural light at that time of the day, which is going to help you to kind of get your circadian rhythm better. It will help you to produce more melatonin at night. So we're already in the daytime thinking about what can we do to get repair sleep at night, because that's really, really important. And you need sort of a good circadian rhythm, cortisol, melatonin sort of balance to do that, right? So you have that. And then you say, and now we know predictably your energy system is going to tank around 4. So you have to engineer your day, or try to give yourself some little bit of respite around 4 o'clock, even if it's just for 10 minutes. So one of the things I will often suggest to say, even if you can just be in a room by yourself, away from any of your dependents just for 10 minutes, dark room, legs up the wall, a few minutes of just focused diaphragmatic breathing, a few minutes of just focused gentle pelvic floor pumping, right? Coordinating it with the breath, gentle, and a few minutes of ankle pumping, right? So if you're doing a few minutes of each of those, you know, it's about 10 minutes. And it's like a little bit of an energy system reboot that you're in control of, that you understand your biology. You're kind of ahead of the eight ball there. And these are some like basic strategies that can make a huge, huge, huge difference to the energy system. Another tool I love are leggings or compression wear by companies like EVB and SRC. So SRC really has a lot of pregnancy products. Both companies do a lot for postpartum products. So, you know, I'm more familiar with SRC Health's pregnancy products, but their medical grade compression leggings that come right up over the pelvis, over the belly. So not only do you get that proprioceptive input, just to kind of make you feel like you're being kind of supported and taken care of. It's like that proprioception. But because it's medical grade compression, actually now your vascular system isn't working as hard, right? So it's saving some of your energy system, right? So I find that women who are having this pain output, and generally it's because they are just so taxed. And a lot of the time they don't have enough support. They don't have enough support at work. They don't have enough support at home. Like you kind of see these profiles of these people, right? So energy tax and not having enough support comes up a lot. So the compression wear is very, very supportive in multiple ways. Getting out for the walk doesn't have to be long. Understanding your energy system. So certainly that's definitely something that I end up talking to with a lot of my clients and helping them to understand, you know, even though they might be feeling like they want to use that end part of the day just kind of to themselves because they're just run ragged and it's like the only time they get to themselves. So they're maybe tempted to like not get into bed until midnight or something. Helping them to understand that biologically, especially at this time, that they have energy shunting towards growing another human. Every single organ system has more demands on it when you're pregnant. It is not the time to shortchange your physical repair sleep. And that's 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. So it's like you are much better to get to bed early and then naturally wake up early in the morning and the house is still quiet. Have time to yourself then, but really helping people to understand to capitalize on that physical repair sleep and how to kind of just organize a few hacks in their day to sort of watch their circadian rhythm and their energy system. So those can be powerful places to start, but as well as people just really, really believing it isn't a mechanical issue. And that can be a tough one to convince people of. So another little trick I have around that for people who really are struggling to buy in that it's not a mechanical issue because they're saying, but how come if I stand on one foot to put my pants on, it's like that predictable, like shooting pain. It literally feels like my symphysis pubis is going to explode. It feels like that to them. Or every time, like I try to go walking, you're kidding me, you're telling me to walk, I can't walk. Every time I walk, I feel like my pelvis is going to fall apart. But then I'll have them in my clinic walk backwards. I say, okay, so I just want you to try walking backwards. And, you know, oftentimes the experience is very, very different, even though it's the same mechanical loading, because it isn't a programmed neuro tag going off that walking is dangerous. This is dangerous, right? So that can be a nice way to kind of help people become convinced and more confident that, okay, maybe it is just sensitivity and it's not a structural problem. And that's why if someone has some guidance with someone, you know, that then you're connecting with them again a few weeks later, you can be kind of reassuring them and explaining these concepts to them in a slightly different way until it really, really lands, right? So those are some of the key sort of, I guess I would say, treatments to start is making sure people understand pain. You're doing things to help them really be convinced that they have robust structural integrity in their pelvis. That's really, really important that they can get that. And then kind of shifting focus to the energy system. Those are kind of two places usually where I start.
And I think it's so interesting how actually lots of the things that you're suggesting are things that we should probably all be doing as well. And it also highlights the kind of mind-body connection that I think we've all got pretty bad at. I've talked about this on a previous podcast, I think, about how in studio when I'm training a new client, I'll often give them an exercise to do. And then afterwards I'll say, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how difficult was that? And they'll be like, oh, they might be trying to look at their watch, you right. know, their heart rate monitor. They're like, I don't know. And I say, well, choose a number. You know, if 10 is really difficult and 1 is really easy, what number would you give it? And they're like, oh, I just don't know. And at first, it's like they're so disconnected from their head and their body. It's almost like we're so used to relying on apps and watches to tell us how we are feeling that actually we forget that our brain and our mental health is so connected to how our body performs and how our body moves as well. And actually lots of those risk factors you mentioned have a psychological aspect. And even just saying to a mum at 4 o'clock, you know, take yourself off for 10 minutes, fill up that energy tank. Whilst it is slightly physical, it's also psychological. And I think that's sometimes where we forget that it's not always my pelvis hurts, therefore I need to keep my pelvis still. It's that lots of other things are going on as well that are contributing to that pain.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's exactly that. And one of the points you mentioned there is it's the concept of interoception. And that's sort of, you know, it's almost a bit like proprioception. It's like our awareness of kind of what's happening in our body. And really, more and more people now are lacking this for the reasons you just said. And we're so busy and not taking the time to just be in our body and notice and be connected. And the interesting thing is that as we get these more protective mechanisms going on, that actually correlates, and this has been studied, with generally like less introspection, right? And so it's really critical that one of our interventions has to be bringing that back. I mean, we have so much data to support using mindfulness actually as an intervention to rewire the brain, to get the amygdala smaller, and to actually set you up for a much better birth, right? Myself and Gentle Birth, Tracy Donegan, we recently just did a massive study. It's in for publication right now, proving this. But these mindful interventions too are also excellent when you have an amplified pain system, because again, like we're rewiring the system. So you're quite right. Like when I'm having individuals do that little reboot, you know, at 4 o'clock, or some of like the mindful movement, you know, just sequences that I'll give them. Part of it is that it's an act of mindfulness and trying to be. I will often say when you go out for your morning walk, if you are able to, just, you know, try to not bring distractions with you. The purpose of the walk isn't for how many steps you get. The purpose of the walk isn't to get your heart rate up. We have to understand the purpose for movement and exercise when our nervous system is wound up is nourishing it to bring it to homeostasis. It is not to develop fitness. We cannot develop fitness when our system is not in homeostasis. It's the wrong goal, right? So I think if we can just give people sort of permission to sort of refocus on nourishing themselves and indicating, you know, if you find on your walk, your mind is going in the past, be aware of it and just bring it back to the present. If it's going into the future and you're starting to think about, oh my goodness, like what if this labor ends up like the last one and it was so traumatic? You know, notice it, don't make a judgment, but bring it back into the now. Try to notice what's around you. You know, what smells are you smelling? What are you hearing? You know, try to, you know, so people become a little bit more aware, like aware of their tendency to ruminate or to have fear of the future. And so much of that is actually rooted in this presentation, right? So yeah, like the mindfulness piece, that mind-body connection, is really, really important. It really is one of like the core tenets of getting this issue corrected at the root.
Yeah. And that also helps me with the next question that I had. So often we will hear people get in touch and say, I've just been told I've got pelvic girdle pain. Does that mean I can't exercise anymore? Or can I do the bump plan? Or should I stop doing Pilates? Should I stop doing X? And I think we've kind of covered it essentially in that because we know that it's not a biomechanical issue with the pelvis, standing on one leg, if it causes pain, it's not because of the necessarily standing on one leg. It's not that your pelvis is not able to support itself or your glutes aren't strong enough. It's that the sensitivity there that's being thrown up. What would your answer be to someone if they said, I've just found out I've got pelvic girdle pain. Should I stop exercising?
My first question would be, do the exercises feel good to do? And do you, like, can you get through them? And do you feel good with them after? And if they say, well, no, actually I was feeling like as I was kind of trying to do these exercises every day that was aggravating, then I would say, well, maybe for now, those aren't the right movements at the moment. Because really our messaging needs to be, you don't just exercise and put up with discomfort and hope it's going to help you later. I mean, if you're going through something and your body is telling you this isn't working, you need to listen to that, right? So, I guess my answer would be like, it would depend. And if they were like, no, I'm fine with the exercises, but I'm just afraid if I exercise, I'll make it worse. And it's like, no, movement is good. Mm-hmm. Movement is good. The only things we don't want you doing exercise wise is if it's hurting and your alarm system is going off during that, communicating to you that at this moment, this task isn't appropriate. And it's likely not appropriate for different reasons than you think, but it's still not appropriate, right? Like if you're having pain when you're walking, doesn't mean that therefore we don't want you walking, but we want to figure out, well, why is your brain, finding walking threatening? Why is your brain finding, prenatal Pilates threatening? It shouldn't. What is going on? Is it because your pelvic floor is in such a locked up position that every time you're attempting to do movements in that class, that load transfer is supposed to happen in a particular way, it isn't happening that way with you because your system isn't working? Because we actually have to unlock a few things first, right? Maybe. So like, that's what we always want people to understand. It's like, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do prenatal Pilates. We want to make sure we get you to the point that you can do it completely pain-free and to the point that it feels good. It feels like you can do it with ease, mm-hmm. right? So if there are some things for us to do ahead of that to get you there, absolutely, we'll get you there. So that's always my answer, but it's always, you should be able to walk and do basic low impact exercise when you're pregnant. You should be. You need to do that to maintain a certain degree of health for you and your baby and to have a good birth and a good recovery. So we have to figure out what is stopping you from doing something like that. If someone's saying to me, well, no, like I'm fine with my prenatal yoga class and I'm fine with walking, it's just honestly, it's so frustrating because I can't go to my Orange Theory class or my F45. Like then I get the pain. I would be explaining to them, well, those types of exercises produce a lot of cortisol and adrenaline. So probably your system at this point just can't manage that. You're growing a baby. There's all these things. So probably for now, it's not reasonable to expect your body to be able to manage that. Right? So that's probably one that just for now, take it off. And it's not because of a mechanical thing. It's because of limited resources of energy, right? But basic low impact movement, no, we need to be doing everything possible to make sure people can get back to all those things pain-free before they birth their baby. Absolutely.
Perfect. So I guess essentially kind of the takeaway from this, Sinead, is that if somebody is finding that they are getting pain around the pelvic area or down their legs that is persistent, that is affecting their life, that does not seem to go away, they need to go and seek help. At least in the UK, I think you would originally either tell your midwife or your GP, I guess whoever you saw first, and potentially ask to be referred to someone like yourself, a pelvic health physio, someone who specializes in pelvic girdle pain. And it wouldn't be that they said, right, stop doing this, stop doing this, stop doing this. It would be that they would work out with you. Okay, so why is it that you personally are having pelvic girdle pain? And then how can we start ticking each of these off to try and down-regulate the sensitivity that you're having so that eventually you can do the things that you want to do and you are relatively pain-free And then hopefully that awareness that you could get better will also contribute to you getting
better. You summarized that perfectly.
Is that accurate?
That's exactly it. And if you end up interfacing with someone who really is doing what you said, saying you need to keep your legs together every time you move, and, you know, we'll just have to just manage this as best as we can until the baby comes, and we're just going to stop doing X, Y, and Z. Like, if you end up with a person like that, who appears to be very well-meaning, that is going to lead you down the wrong road. So, you know, I'd strongly advise you look for someone else who really is practicing with this updated perspective.
Yeah, that's so helpful. And it, you know, it has changed a lot, even from when I first trained 11 years ago to now. It does feel very different. We would say, you know, try not to do this. And if we can stabilize the pelvis more, and now it is more like restorative, the psychological effects as well, which is absolutely fascinating. So long may it continue. But yeah, that's been so, so helpful, Sinead. And is there anything that we haven't covered that you had wanted to cover today? I mean, I could ask you a million questions, but I'm aware of time. Is there anything that you think we might have forgotten that anyone who's pregnant right now might need to know?
The only thing I would say is talking about the postpartum context. So one of the things that I have noticed in my practice is, you know, I tend to see now a lot of women struggling more persistently with this issue because they've gone to many other care providers who one after the other are approaching it from a perspective of biomechanics and nociception. And so it's no wonder these women end up spinning their wheels sometimes for like 2 years, right? So even if, you know, you are, let's say, a year and a half postpartum, and so at that point, you're not really thinking pregnancy related. You're just thinking, I have this persisting pelvic girdle pain and it's like been awful. It's critical that, you know, you understand, well, when did the pain first start? Because I work with actually now a lot of women who their pain first started within a few weeks after they gave birth. And it's actually because often in many cases, their system was really triggered by a traumatic birth or extreme sort of depletion and lack of support and very difficult context in that early postpartum period. So like their whole system just kind of went into alarm, including their pelvic floor. And in many ways, some of these same things we need to be thinking of, we need to understand it sort of as that amplified system from the perspective of nociplastic pain. And I have to say, so often, that whole pregnancy context with some of these moms was missed by like 10 different care providers, right? So even if in the postpartum context, like you're still kind of struggling with this issue. And so you're so far postpartum, you're not really thinking it's really related to that perinatal care period. If the pain started within that period, you know, there probably are some important clues around that context that actually will help us personalize a recovery plan for you, right? So it's just important, even in that postnatal context, if you're kind of struggling with this, some of these same principles apply. So I just wanted to kind of point that out as well.
Yeah, I think that's also part of a much bigger picture as well, that we often say to clients, you know, once you're postnatal, you're kind of always postnatal. You know, we'll have people say to us, oh, but I had my baby 3 years ago, you know, like they're grown up now. You know, I don't need to think about my pelvic floor. And we try and say, you know, like the changes that happen during pregnancy and during labor and postnatally, you know, there are changes that will potentially follow us through our whole life. You know, you're always kind of postnatal. So sometimes we shouldn't really chop it off and be like, right, well, my baby's too old for me to be postnatal anymore. We can still have issues that are related to pregnancy and that initial postpartum
period. Yeah, I would
agree.
I would say, like, especially if you haven't intentionally put some effort into restoring those systems, right? So you're quite right. It could be a couple years down the road, still struggling with pelvic pain, still having kind of mild feelings of pressure, incontinence that you've just kind of got used to putting up with because it's not as bad as it used to be. But if you haven't ever kind of just had a chance just to reboot the whole system, then yes, like the system hasn't been rebooted, you know, like once you've kind of put that effort in, rebooted everything, all your symptoms are gone, then maybe you don't necessarily contextualize yourself necessarily as postpartum in the same way. But I would agree, even if you're 10 years postpartum, but you're kind of having issues you've just put up with for 10 years and you have never properly restored your system, yeah, you're still postnatal until you restore it, right? So I would agree with that.
And you deserve, to get help as well. I think sometimes people feel embarrassed that I can't believe I've left it this long. Like I shouldn't still be talking about the fact that I think this might have happened during birth because my kid's 3 years old. And actually you always deserve that support no matter how much later that is.
And the solutions are straightforward. The solutions are so straightforward that can really ameliorate things for good with only a couple sessions with someone. So absolutely, you deserve it. Like, do not suffer with anything, right? With anything, pain or anything. Don't suffer. Yeah.
Agreed. And just really quickly on that note, that's just reminded me that, sometimes we can think, especially, in the UK, the NHS is very stretched. We know with everything that's happened with the pandemic, we understand that, trying to get referrals to see a pelvic health physio can take a long time. And not everyone has the funds to see somebody privately. But actually, a lot of the suggestions and treatment options that you gave today were essentially free. So after seeing somebody as amazing as you, who can say, you're probably getting pain because of X, Y, and Z. Actually, lots of the things that you suggested were things that won't keep costing them money. They won't have to keep coming back and seeing a physio necessarily. It's things they can do at home, which
absolutely.
Is really positive.
Most
as
of
well.
My clients, like almost all of them, I do a very detailed assessment, and always my initial assessment is virtual only. And then I don't even see people again for at least 4 to 6 weeks. Because I want them to have lots of time to start doing these things. And then at that point, unless they live in a different country or something and I can never see them in person, I will see them in clinic for a half an hour visit. So then I actually can get my hands on them. I can, internally assess the pelvic floor and I can do some of those things. But I have to say that 9 times out of 10, the amount of improvement is so dramatic in those 4 weeks. Just them being put on the right personalized path and kind of understanding things. So you're quite right. I usually only see my clients a couple times. This is not something that people need to come in and in and in. In fact, I would say if that's the care plan that's being suggested to you, it is probably, not the right lens of care. It's probably someone maybe integrating some biopsychosocial approach, but still more doing a mechanical approach, and that is not necessary, and that probably isn't honestly the right approach, really and truly. I've had a chance to actually help a number of physios in the UK redesign their group visits, that are offered through the hospital system there, because traditionally they've been very biomechanically oriented, these kind of group sessions. And it's really nice to see that starting to transform. So, and I would say that they're going to start to get much better outcomes now. So you are quite right. This isn't the type of thing that requires lots of visits and care and ongoing. No, it really doesn't.
Yeah. Well, Sinead, thank you for everything that you are doing in the world of pelvic girdle pain, because anyone who's listening to this who maybe doesn't work in this industry, Sinead is really, really leading movement and education and changing the way that we think about pelvic girdle pain, which will help so, so many women. So thank you so, so much. And for spending all this time with me today as well.
Thank you, Holly, for having me, and honestly for everything you do to translate all this important science, because you have some great platforms. So this is how we really get the word out. Otherwise, research, it takes like 14 years that studies are published before it kind of is translated, right? So really need platforms like this. So thank you for having me.
Firstly, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Bun in the Oven, and I hope you found it helpful. For more support, do head to the show notes below to find links and supplementary reading you feel may be helpful to you. Secondly, this podcast can only help those who know about it. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much if you could subscribe to Bun in the Oven and give us a 5-star rating. While podcasts are easy to listen to, they take a lot of effort to create, and your support in sharing Bun in the Oven will help me encourage more guests to join me for future episodes. Thank you so much for listening today, and enjoy the rest of your day.